Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good morning and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Joni Cannell, your host for Real Life Lessons. Our topic today is leading a company in real estate. And our leading lady today is Julie Minas with Minas Realty Company. Good morning, Julie.
Good morning, Joni.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. I'm so glad we get to hear about your interesting stories here and your interesting company. And well, our listeners, just stay tuned. I want to get our listeners just a little bit of background on what you do. And from what I understand, you run a homeowners association management company. So what does that mean, Julie? Tell us and tell the listeners, what do you do and who are your customers?
Yes, that's correct. We manage about 130 different homeowner associations throughout San Diego County. We do have we're getting into the Temecula and Murrieta area as well. We're hired by the volunteer board of directors. They're homeowners that live within their communities. Typically, it's three or five board members. They have volunteered their time to serve as board members and make business decisions on behalf of the community. So we're actually hired by volunteers. My company is a for-profit company, but their communities are nonprofit. So we're here to serve them, give them advice and guidance on how to make good business decisions to run their community.
Wow, that's really interesting to be able to be in both the for-profit and the not-for-profit world. I'm sure you have quite the level of expertise. And a lot of people, when I'm a consultant, they want to know, do you work in nonprofit? And it's a different set of skills. So hopefully that'll come up a little bit today. But I want to start out with something else, Julie, because your company is different as well because it's a family-run business. There aren't that many family-run businesses. So let's hear a little bit about that. So let's tell our listeners, you know, what was it like to grow into your role? And how did your father, who was the owner before, right, how did he hand over the reins to you?
Well, I joined his company about 18 years ago, and the very first day that I started, he said, first things first, you're going to learn how to be a community manager. So I was a community manager. I had probably six or eight communities that I managed. I was going to the monthly property inspections, going to the monthly board meetings, full-time community manager. And at the same time, my father's office manager that had been here for many, many years, she left because of having a second baby and didn't return. She decided she's just going to be a full-time mom. So in addition to being a community manager, I was also the office manager, and I also handled all of the business development, sales, and acquisitions. So it was a lot. It was very overwhelming, and it became pretty clear that my talents lied in the sales and marketing and acquisitions. So we gradually delegated the communities off of my plate. We promoted somebody from within and made them office manager, and then my focus has been business development ever since. So it was great to start by being a community manager. I did that for, I don't know, the first five or eight years that I was with the company. And I'm really grateful that my dad had me be a community manager in the very beginning, because otherwise I wouldn't have compassion and empathy for my managers that are doing it every day now.
Yeah.
So that was a great way to kind of ease me into the business.
Oh, that is really important to be able to do the jobs of the people you're managing so that you really know what it is they're doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the questions I have for you is that, I mean, yeah, you moved into this role, but one of the things that is so important for people, especially younger people today, who don't always feel this way, is the empowerment piece. Like, how did you feel within yourself empowered to be able to take on the role of the CEO?
Well, it kind of happened gradually, naturally, organically, where I went from being a community manager to wearing all those hats to just business development. And then over time, my father was stepping out of the business, working less. He was in the office less, and I stepped into that role, and I really just kind of didn't have a choice. I had to step up because he had health issues, and it was becoming apparent that, you know, he wasn't going to be too active for much longer. So I really needed to step up. And the CFO that was here working for my father for about 23 years, he kind of saw the writing on the wall that my dad was going to be phasing out and that I was going to be taking over. And he didn't particularly like that idea of having to report to a woman and somebody that was much younger than him. So he left, and again, I had to step up. I had to do what needed to be done to keep the show running. So it was kind of a no-brainer where I needed to hire another CFO, which I did. Found a wonderful, wonderful CFO, and it all worked out really, really great.
Well, that's a story for our women leaders there. The CFO actually leaves, so he won't have to report to a younger woman. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you said something, though, that I just want to highlight for the listeners, especially our millennial listeners, because you said the empowerment came over time. It happened mm-hmm. over time. And that's so many people are just so impatient to get to the top right away. They
mm-hmm.
just want to jump into the next role, and you're saying no. You know, you took these different roles, and you learned how to do them, and you learned what it took to manage the people of in those roles, and then you moved up gradually. And I think that's a really important lesson for people to pay attention to, that sometimes, you know, a little bit longer actually will give you more skills. You know, you find your strengths, like you said, you found your strengths in that time too, and the ability to manage once you're there.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think it's important that, if you are in a leadership role or if you're growing into a leadership role, that you pay attention to the people around you, people that are older, wiser, more business savvy, people that are smarter than you, surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you, and identifying who can I go to for this question or this piece of advice. Because you don't go to certain people for certain things. It's good to be able to know who to go to for certain advice. And I've gotten a lot of great advice from a lot of different people over the years. And that advice gave me the confidence to do what I needed to do. And I'm just eternally grateful for that advice that I've been given.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I tell people the same thing. Because, yeah, and the idea of reaching out and asking questions and asking for help, too, is something that is really a strength, even though sometimes people see it as a weakness. But it's really
mm-hmm.
a strength because that's
mm-hmm.
how you learn.
Well, yeah.
So I want to go back to the HOA industry because, you know, it's a little bit different than some of the others. And we talked about working with nonprofits, volunteers, for example, as your clients. So what kind of unique challenges do you have in that industry and perhaps as a leader in that industry?
Well, with homeowner associations, you know, it started out, this industry started out, gosh, I don't know, 50 years ago, and it was like cowboy times. There were no laws or rules and regulations. It was very loosey-goosey, and over the years, it has become much more governed and structured, and so it's really come a long ways. There's ever-changing laws that HOA management companies need to abide by and share that advice and guidance with our board of directors to help them make good business decisions. You know, Airbnbs right now is a hot issue. There was another issue that came down the pike about where all of the balconies on every single unit would need to be inspected, I think on an annual basis or something, but we just learned that that's not going to pertain to homeowner associations, so that's a big relief there. We're always educating board of directors, staying competitive, setting ourselves apart from the rest. That's constantly on the forefront of my mind.
Yeah, it sounds like keeping your HOAs informed with the changes in the regulations would be an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure they're compliant.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And have you had any specific challenges? I mean, when you're dealing with volunteers, are they as quick to respond and all that, or does it sometimes take more
to
get them on board?
Yeah, we have to be chameleons to all of our different board of directors that we work for. Some have never served on a board of directors before, so we have to really hold their hand. Others, you know, take the reins. They're very assertive at the board meeting. Some might be a little over the top aggressive or not respectful to the homeowners that are present. So there's a lot that goes into being a community manager, sitting there at a board meeting, you know, kind of trying to train board members, teach them, educate them, advise them. At the same time, you're kind of orchestrating the whole room, giving people the opportunity to speak if they have a complaint or a suggestion or whatnot. It's a dance, really. So it takes a special kind of person to be able to juggle all that on the spot. At a board meeting, after you've worked a full day, and these meetings are typically at night and they last, you know, up to 2 hours, sometimes over 2 hours. So it's, as my father used to say, it's a grueling job. Grueling was the word he used.
Wow.
It's not physical, but it can be very emotionally draining. I think we do a really great job with helping our board members, bringing value, educating them. Many of them appreciate when we educate them, set them, make them aware of things that they didn't even think of. Just making sure that they're making good business decisions, reasonable decisions, not discriminating in any way. So there's just a lot that goes into it, but it's very rewarding.
Yeah, I can imagine they'd be grateful. I know when I volunteer on boards, having some knowledge of what I'm supposed to be doing would be really helpful. So having an organization like yours to, you know, explain this to the board members who may not be real estate people. They might have some completely different career. Yeah. Well, you know, you're kind of going through my model, my real-life model, without me even asking you about it. We talked about, you know, resilient, empowered, authentic, and limber. That's the real. And the limber you got. We have to be chameleons, you know, to deal with all these different people. And you're moving into resilience with a grueling job. And, you know, how have you been resilient? And how has that come up for you and to face the challenges you've had running this organization?
Well, you know, when the CFO that was here for about 23 years decided he was finished, the IT person that was also here decided he was going to leave as well. So I had two key people leave within probably the same month, and that was probably the most challenging time of my 18 years I've been in this business, where, you know, I really wasn't officially, legally wearing the hat of CEO at that time, and I just had to step up. The show had to go on, so I just stayed focused with the task at hand, and that task was I got to find a new CFO, I got to find an IT company, and I just got very focused and pretty much put everything aside until those two positions were filled, and because I had a staff that needed, you know, assistance and support and clients and all of that. So that was probably my most challenging time during during my career and where I had to be most resilient.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I love the way you just said the show has to go on. So you just stuck it out and kept moving regardless of how hard it was. Yeah. Sometimes that's all it takes, you know, just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Even if you're like, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. Like that Dial commercial, never let them see you sweat.
Yeah. You know, I tell you, there have been times in my various aspects of my career that I haven't always been the smartest, the best at something. I've just persevered, and that's what's helped me move forward and get ahead of others. And it sounds like that's some of the advice you're giving here. It's like, you know what? You don't wait around to find out that you know all the information. You just keep going because the show can't stop.
Yeah.
Wow. So, you know, Julie, we have a lot of women leaders who are listening to our show. And, you know, you mentioned one challenge that you had about being a woman. I mean, what other – has anything else come up for you that would be a specific challenge being a woman in this industry? How did you handle them?
You know, I really haven't experienced any number of challenges, or if I am, you know, I haven't been treated any certain way, I don't think, because I'm a woman in a leadership position. I haven't been mistreated or yeah, so I can't really think of anything other than that experience when the CFO decided to leave because he didn't want to report to a young woman. Other than that, that was a pretty major experience for me. So other than that, I think that was a doozy. I think that was good enough.
You got it all at once.
I got it all at once, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's really interesting, and it's also great to see. You know, I don't know what percentages there are of women in the industry of real estate. I think, or in HOAs, you got volunteer boards. You probably have a mix. So it's nice to see this sort of progressive thinking there, at least among a lot of the people that you work with. Well, I know that some of our listeners are going to want to contact you after the show. So just in case they do, how would you like our listeners to contact you?
They can go on to our website, menas.com. It's M-E-N-A-S, menas.com, or info@menas.com. Any one of those will work. I'm here every day, Monday through Friday, taking calls. I have also my director of operations. She also, we kind of partner with the sales and acquisitions, and we just acquired our largest account of over 400 units in the UTC area, so we're very excited about that. And we have a couple other large ones in the pipeline, and we are growing at a nice, steady pace, and we welcome every opportunity. So we'd love to hear from whoever might be looking for a new HOA management.
Yeah, well, in case our listeners didn't catch the details there, we'll have it in the show notes, so you can always get online and look up Julie after the show as well.
Great.
So, Julie, one of the things I've been really wanting to ask you about, because your company prides itself on providing outstanding customer service, and I've looked at your website, your videos, everything about it is just saying how great you are with customer service and what you've been talking about. But I have to tell you, Julie, it's not a day goes by practically that I'm having a conversation with somebody about bad customer service, either, you know, with a restaurant, a store, a company I'm dealing with. How do you do this? And how do you stand out, and how do you hire people and to be great customer service folks?
Well, I think it starts with creating a company culture with a positive working environment, one where people feel comfortable admitting their mistakes, one where there is trust, where they're empowered to handle matters, share ideas, offer suggestions. We're very careful about overloading our staff, giving them too much work, where they might fail, and not be able to provide great service. So basically it comes down to, if you don't have the time, you can't help. It's even if out of a working environment, out of the professional environment, just on a personal level, if you just don't have the time, you're not able to help somebody. So we make sure that, you know, our staff is not overwhelmed with too much work. We have a very intimate relationship between every employee and their supervisor where they meet on a regular basis to learn, you know, and measuring their performance. So it's that was something my father had mentioned, instilled in me from the very beginning, is that if you overload your staff, they're not going to be able to provide that great customer service, and then we ultimately lose the business, and we certainly don't want to do that. So we keep that very present all the time. And during interviews, it starts with the interview and hiring the right people. So we listen very carefully during the interviews. The job, we feel the job, you know, most anybody can handle the job, but it's the personality. Does the personality fit with our culture? And that's, we take that pretty seriously too. I've got an amazing team, and it's a great thing. So I think that's really what it comes down to. Provide, you got to have happy employees to, you know, exude a great attitude towards the clients. So
yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Julie. And, you know, I never heard it expressed the way you just said it, that if you don't have the time, you're not able to help. That's key because, you know, you need the time to be able to work with people to help them out, but also having that time gives you the attitude to want to help, right? If
right.
you just feel bogged down all the time and overworked and resentful, yeah, absolutely, the attitude's going to shift. So having that time and not overloading your people will help both with their just ability to be able to help as well as their attitude and being happy. So
yeah,
interesting. So one of the things that I've talked to you about previously is hiring millennials and having them in your company. How is that different? Have you had to flex to work with millennials, this new generation who does things so differently?
Yes. We have learned through the interviewing process that there seems to be two very distinct camps of millennials. There are those that everybody hears about, that they're all entitled and you know, kind of have this attitude and think that they should be the CEO next week. And and then there's the other type of millennial who are extremely hardworking, have great work ethics. They're willing to work hard. They're very smart, very savvy, very efficient, utilizing the technology that we have today. We only hire the latter type of millennials, and we've become very good at identifying the two different types of millennials during the interview process. We, you know, we were interviewing one young man, and we were at the final stages thinking we were going to hire him, and his third interview, he wanted to actually see where he was going to sit before he accepted the position. He wanted to see his desk, and he also wanted to know how frequently pay increases would happen. So those two things right there are kind of, you know, kind of red flags of things to listen to in interviews. So I think it's really important to pay attention to that in interviews. But the millennials, 50% of my staff are millennials, and they are wonderful, and I embrace them. I learn from them. I value them, and it's a great thing. I try to teach them what I know, and they're teaching me things they know, and it's very simpatico. It's a great partnership.
Yeah, all these sound like good lessons across the board. I mean, no matter what age you are, if someone's asking those kind of questions, you know, about sitting at their desk, or even, you know, that would suggest that they want to move up very quickly or have certain perks that, you know, might be a little premature, those would be good red flags to listen to. And that's a good way to put that in your interviewing strategy, too. I mean, a lot of people ask, you know, how do we know we hire someone and all of a sudden it's a complete change? So if you have a strategy for interviewing and listening and asking those kind of questions to be able to notice it, that'll really help you with good hires instead of making those mistakes.
Right. And not to be hasty, just be patient. Wait for the right person that's going to be the right fit with the company. And I really appreciate my staff that is willing to step up, fill in, take on more work for an extended amount of time in order to wait for the right person. I just really, really admire that in my staff.
I've seen that all too often. People just want to get that position filled, and they'll take somebody. You know, it's the kind of thing, too, you know. You see friends, they want to get married. They just take the next person who comes along there. You know, you want to wait and make sure you got the right fit for a long-term situation here. Oh, boy. So we're coming toward the end of our time here. I have a good question for you that might help inspire some of our people, too. And that is, I mean, Julie, you're a very genuine person. It comes across. I mean, in my interactions with you, I'm sure our listeners are hearing that as well. And, you know, a lot of people feel like they have to put a front, like some kind of mask or face on as a leader, and especially women. They feel like they have to be what people describe as more masculine, or, you know, they can't show certain sides of themselves. I mean, this happens for anyone and everyone. But, you know, how have you been able to maintain your authenticity as a leader? And, you know, have you ever tried, you know, and felt that you had to put a mask on, or have you maintained your authenticity throughout?
I just am myself. I only know how to be myself. I speak honestly. I try to consider my audience and cater to it and be tactful and sensitive. I learned a long time ago that I used to be very sarcastic, and I learned that that does not work in the workplace. So I eliminated sarcasm completely from my personality years ago. And that was a good thing. So being authentic, I think it's important that you just be yourself, be respectful, be considerate, listen. Listening to your staff is important. I welcome everybody's suggestions, ideas. They understand that they may not necessarily get implemented, but I'm open to ideas and suggestions, and I think that's really important that people know that. It's important that they feel comfortable sharing ideas and their thoughts, just having that environment, that, you know, safe zone, if you will. In regards to wearing a different mask, no, I don't really feel like I wear any type of different mask. I did have to get comfortable using different words, though. Words like I expect this to be done by a certain time. You know, I expect you to do this. It still is kind of challenging for me to say that because it sounds so demanding in a sense. But I've kind of figured out ways to soften it in such a way. So, you know, asking something to be done by a certain due date, I ask them, is that a reasonable due date for you? Will that work with everything else you have going on? So just kind of having that back and forth dialogue and respectfulness and consideration is I think, the best way to operate.
Yeah, that's really interesting that even just the words that you use can have a big impact on the way that you perceive yourself and the way others perceive you. And this advice to soften it up, to, you know, to check in, see if that sounds like something they can do. Wow, that, I mean, you say it so lightly, Julie, but that's really big. To check in with people and listen, like you said, and finding a way that works for you. So, let me go into just a couple of lessons learned because we're going to have to wrap up. And, you know, some of the things I heard from Julie today were, you know, be patient and listen to your people and build the trust with them so that you have happy employees, so then they will, in turn, interact with your customers in a much better, more productive way. So that's a great lesson from the HOA management business here. So I'd like to say thank you, Julie, for being our leading lady today.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Joni.
It's been great, and a special thanks to all our listeners. We'll be back again for another Women Lead Radio show. We're here every Monday at 9 a.m. and Friday at 2 p.m. I'm Joni Cannell, host of Real Life Lessons. Thank you for listening, and remember, real women are resilient, empowered, authentic, and limber.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.